Chapter 6, Stockton.
Let's go back to Stockton for a minute and talk a little more about, you knew a woman there.
Well, I knew a lot of people there. I got to know the whole inner sanctum of Stockton. Let me precede the story of the woman I met with how involved I was politically and socially in Stockton. Anybody who was a reporter on the Stockton Record was important. This was a town of about 125,000 people at the time. And the best way to illustrate this is I got invited to a stag party where everybody who was anybody in Stockton, the police chief, the sheriff, the mayor, were all there being served cocktails by waitresses in see-through plastic aprons and nothing more. And cigar smoking and a bunch of jolly good fellows there to look at a porno, which was very, very illegal and immoral and illegitimate, and you name it. And that's where I saw my first porno flick, was at that social with everybody in town who was anybody, and me being invited said I was somebody. Stockton was interesting for me because it was my first experience at being a reporter on a beat, covering stories, and my assignments were varied. One of them was what they called the development beat, and that included the port of Stockton, and that was one of my regular calls. Shipping was important in Stockton. It was the furthest inland deep water seaport in the United States. Deep water. Oh. Inland. Ships had to go distance of what? About 60 miles up the whole river run and through the canals to land at the port of Stockton. I did the trip as a story once on a freighter. Fascinating trip. In any event, the port director was a jolly fellow, Elmo Ferrari, and he and his henchman, his assistant, whose name was Hench, they taught me bar dice. We were drinking companions, and it was a very, very informal atmosphere. I was one of the boys, and that way they controlled a great deal of what I was writing. But I had my ways too, because the secretary for Elmo was Viola Hazard, who was smart, attractive, footloose, and fancy-free. And we ended up a rather interesting affair. And in the confines of my apartment, where Viola spent a good deal of time, I got some interesting information about the port. It worked. Stockton wasn't that great a source of big stories. However, I did run into one big-time story, and it was probably the most exciting journalistic experience I had the entire time in Stockton, and in many ways, even since. I was driving out on one of the roads leading out of Stockton and passed by Holt Farm Equipment, a big spread on the outskirts of town. And in a big field out back behind Holt's farm stuff were a bunch of tanks, army tanks. I got curious enough to go out there when I saw someone, I stopped it and got out when I saw someone out there working on the tanks, and talked to a young guy who had been in the Army as a tank specialist. And he talked freely. He said, yeah. They hired him to fix up these tanks. They're going to ship them somewhere. He didn't know where. How many were there? Well, they all told there were about 50 of them, but they were scrounging parts and moving things around. Didn't know how many they were going to come up with in the final analysis. I started wondering about that. Tanks, you can't do that sort of thing. And checked it out and found out that the tanks had been brought to Holt to be scrapped. Chasing more, I got to talk to the guy who was responsible for those tanks. He was a Marine Corps colonel, now out of the service, L.C. Ives, who had purchased these tanks overseas as scrap and brought them to Stockton to be reconditioned as many as possible. And Ives said to me, you're Jewish, aren't you? I said, yes, I'm Jewish. He says, these tanks are going to end up in Israel. Uh-huh. Well, I thought that ought to be checked. And by pure coincidence, Goldie Meyerson, better known as Golda Meir, who went on to become president of Israel, at the time was the defense secretary. And she was in Los Angeles on some kind of a fundraising thing. I knew that because of the news of the day. And I decided I wanted to talk to her. I got in my car, got time off from the paper, who knew what I was up to, straight with the editor about what was up. That this was really important to check out. Drove to Los Angeles, got there in the morning, dead tired, hadn't slept, made contact with representatives for Goldie and told them what I had. I had photographs and I had all the information that I had been involved in. They knew who I was, what my interest was. They put me in a hotel room, in the same hotel that where she was, and told me to get some sleep. I don't remember how many hours later, maybe 4, 5, they contacted me and said, Mrs. Meyerson would like to see you. I sat down with Goldie, showed her the pictures and the whole story that I had, and she said, I'll get back to you. This has got to be checked out. I'll get back to you. I came back to Stockton, and they did get back to me and said, all we can say is emphatically no. We don't know where these tanks are going, but they are not going to Israel. As the story developed further, it turned out that the tanks were being ready to go to Taiwan for transshipment to Egypt. None of this could ever be pinned down, but this all came out because Ives, when he found out I was going to run the story, came to me at midnight, that shack I had in Stockton, and we stood outside in the courtyard, in the ramshackle yard, and he offered me $75,000, I think, to kill the story. And I told him, no, on principle, but it's too late. The story is already in the hands of my editor, and it was. I said, they're running it tomorrow. He cursed me and went off. You know, now that I think back, he could have killed me. It was a couple of years later that Santa Fe Railroad sued Ives for falsely shipping what was termed scrap metal that was in indeed workable tanks, which was an entirely different rate, and a whole misrepresentation and involved the federal government. And the trial was held in Phoenix. And the kid who was working on those tanks and I were called by Santa Fe, complete expense coverage, to testify at the L.C. Ives trial, which was a civil trial concerning tanks being shipped as scrap metal. Santa Fe won its case, and somehow Ives had enough pull that he covered his tracks. The tanks were shipped off to Taiwan, I think. God knows where they went from there. But the State Department got involved so that they couldn't be transshipped to any belligerent country. And our parting shot in Phoenix was Ives invited me and the mechanic to dinner at his palatial home. And we sat down at dinner and we just rehashed the whole story and how it developed. And Ives was jovial. Apparently he had worked out his deal. And that was the end of the tanks story. It was a big story. It was major, major headlines and carried throughout the country.
This concludes Chapter 6.